Well, good afternoon, and thank you for joining me this afternoon. I hope you've all enjoyed a wonderful Christmas. I would like to update you in our response to COVID. I'm joined here at the lectern by Dr. Henrietta Ewart, our Director of Public Health, who can also provide information on today's breaking news regarding the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. But before I do, I would like to update you on an issue that we used to talk a lot about, Brexit. To assist with questions, we will be able to call on David Corlett, who is head of the European and Trade Policy Team in the Cabinet Office and is in a position to provide more detail if required. Although the challenges of COVID and the government's response to it have taken up a lot of our bandwidth throughout 2020, this does not mean that we have not been able to work on Brexit. Far from it. Officers from across government have been working hard throughout the year to secure the best possible outcome for the Isle of Man. You will have seen from the media that the United Kingdom and the European Union announced on Christmas Eve that after many months they had reached an agreement on their future trade relationship. The document is known as the Trade and Economic Cooperation Agreement. I briefed Tim Ould on it this morning. This afternoon, I would like to take you through what it means for the Isle of Man. Before getting into the substance, it is worth covering some of the basics again. As I'm sure you remember, the people of the United Kingdom voted to leave the European Union on the 23rd of June 2016. I know that many people on our island were, and still maybe are, frustrated that we were not able to vote in a referendum of such importance. For many, it felt that others were making decisions that impacted us. It is worth remembering, of course, that the Isle of Man was never a member of the European Union. We sat outside but had a number of benefits because of the UK's membership. Some of these benefits were related to holding a British passport, the right to travel freely and to settle or work across Europe. Other benefits relating to trade were through something known as Protocol 3. This was a set of really beneficial arrangements that meant we could trade our goods, including our meat, seafood and cheese, into the European market without tariffs or quotas. It was a good place to be. In terms of trade, we had most of the benefits of being a member of the European Union without the cost or many of the obligations. So when voters in the United Kingdom decided to leave the European Union, this did produce a certain amount of uncertainty for us. We have therefore been working closely with the United Kingdom government to ensure that they and the European Union fully understood what was important to us and to ensure that we could get the best possible outcome for the island. Some people were concerned that the UK was negotiating for the Isle of Man rather than us doing it for ourselves. I do want to reassure you on this point. Firstly, it is normal for the UK to negotiate international treaties on behalf of us, the other Crown dependencies and the overseas territories. Secondly, I can tell you that the dialogue we had with the UK was first rate. I had contact with UK ministers regularly. Officials from across government were in constant contact with their opposite numbers in the United Kingdom and with those leading the negotiations. And as the negotiations went into the home straight, the team here at the Cabinet Office and other departments were working through weekends and evenings. This really has been a team effort. Negotiations between the UK and the EU have not been easy, but we were involved at every stage. And our voice was definitely heard. Then on Christmas Eve, we received formal confirmation that a deal had been done. The UK and the EU had agreed their trade and cooperation agreement. Now, why was it so important to get the deal right? There were a number of ways that the negotiations could have ended. You will have seen from the media that continuous uncertainty or whether or not there was going to be a deal was there right to the end. Many of the possible endings could have led to real risks for the island. Let me take you through a couple of them. First, if there had been no deal for the UK, there would have been no deal for the Isle of Man. This could have had a real impact on our economy. Our exports, both manufactured goods and agricultural goods, would have faced tariffs when exported to Europe. This could have made our lamb, cheese, seafoods, for example, and a range of manufactured goods less attractive and potentially impossible to sell. This would have also meant tariffs on imported goods. This is just not about brie, parma ham and other high-end goods. Despite having wonderful produce locally, we do import more than we maybe realise from the European Union. Those goods, and therefore shopping baskets for families across the island, would have become more expensive. Second, there is a real risk at the start of the process that either the EU would refuse to allow the Isle of Man to join any new arrangements, or that the conditions that they might have insisted on to allow us to join might have been impossible for us. If the UK had been in and we had been out, this could have meant real friction in our trade with the UK, as well as tariffs on our exports, a lose-lose situation. This was why we've made every effort to get this right, and I'm pleased to say that this is what we have achieved. As I briefed Timwell this morning, as a result of the agreement, Manx companies will be able to trade with the European market with no tariffs, no quotas, and minimal friction. This applies to manufactured goods and agri-foods. Manx goods will be treated in the same way as UK goods when trading with the European Union. Manx lamb can be sold in the same way as Welsh lamb. Manx seafood can be sold in the way as Scottish seafood. And manufactured goods from Ballasalla can be sold in the same way as manufactured goods from Birmingham. I know from speaking to local businesses who do export that this certainty for the future is what they needed. And I hope that this clarity will encourage those who do not yet export to the EU to consider doing so. Of course, there was give and take in these negotiations. Our ask was for free trade with the EU, no tariffs, no quotas. The EU's ask was that those who had previously fished in our territorial waters could continue to do so. The whole question of fishing has caused a lot of emotional debate here on the island and across in the UK. It was clear that without fish for the EU, there would be no goods for us. We agreed to explore this with the EU, subject to three important principles. First, that only those EU vessels with a proven and recent track record of fishing in Manx waters would be allowed to continue to do so. There could be no increase in the level of fishing undertaken by EU vessels. Second, that any new arrangement had to be a modern and champion sustainability. For example, we needed to be able to reduce or stop fishing in a particular place or for particular species if our stocks were at risk. It might be worth saying that at this point that scallops and queen scallops are not currently fished by EU vessels, and this will remain the case under the new arrangements. Third, that for the first time the Isle of Man would be responsible for licensing and managing effort by EU vessels. There could be no question of anyone else doing this. This is an important measure in the control of our territorial waters. These were important negotiating positions for us, and I am pleased to say that we have secured all of these under the new arrangements. Any EU vessel that wishes to fish in our waters in the future will have to prove a track record of 10 days fishing in any of the three 12-month periods prior to January 2020. They will have to apply to our fisheries team at DEFA for a licence to do so, and they will only be able to fish for the species that they previously did in the section of our waters where they previously did. I know that some people would have liked to have seen all foreign vessels excluded from our waters. I get that. But I believe this approach of allowing into the small number of vessels that can provide the solid and recent track record is balanced and fair, and I am pleased that our new ability to license and manage will mean we can put sustainability of our waters and our industry front and centre. A member of our fishing sector came to speak to me at an event a couple of weeks ago. As he and I discussed, once caught, fish and seafood become goods. If we had refused access to this limited number of EU vessels, and as a result had not secured the goods part of the deal, Manx Court products would have been subject to tariffs when sold into Europe. It was about getting the balance right, and I believe we have. Taken as a package, I believe that this is a good deal for the Isle of Man. Was life under Protocol 3 better? Could the UK have secured a better deal? These are difficult questions to give a certain answer, but I do know that the outcome is better than we had hoped for at the start of the negotiations, and it certainly could have been considerably worse. Before moving on, I would like to take a second to recall that the end of the Brexit transition period is not just about trade. There are things that many of us need to do. Previously, we have talked about three categories of people who needed to ensure that they were ready for 2021. People who traded with the EU, those who come from the EU, and those who travel to the EU. The deal reached by the EU and UK deals with questions of trade. If you trade with the EU, there are changes in documentation and process. I know that businesses have already done a lot to be ready. If you are from the EU, then please make sure you have registered with the EU settlement scheme before the end of June 2021. You can do so either through the United Kingdom or our own system. It is simple to do, and colleagues in the immigration team here can help you. If you visit the EU, please ensure you have checked the latest information regarding insurance, passport validity, pets, and much more. For all of these, there is plenty of information at gov.im/Brexit. Please take a few moments to ensure you are ready for 2021. I am happy to take some questions on this, but before I do, I would like to update you on the Ireland's response to the coronavirus pandemic and reiterate a number of points contained in the statement I delivered to Timbled members this morning. We continue to live our lives in relative freedom, with COVID-19 being held at bay and prevented from affecting our community as deeply as it does elsewhere. We only need to look at the deteriorating situation in the United Kingdom and the emergence of new strains of the infection to reflect on how our lives would change significantly should we allow it to re-enter our community. To enable our current position to be sustained, the importance of observing self-isolation rules cannot be overstated. While people should always aim to self-isolate alone, this is often not possible. In many cases, households are choosing to isolate together, but this leads to the possibility of further infection and therefore greater risk. The returning traveller must follow the guidance for self-isolation within a household. This means that they must remain in their own room away from other household members. If they need to leave their room to use shared facilities, they must make sure they do not come into contact with others and that they sanitise the facilities after use. Even with these precautions, there is still a risk of household transmission, particularly during winter when houses are heated and ventilation poor. We are reviewing the requirements for testing and for household self-isolation, to ensure that we reduce the risk of secondary spread of infection as far as possible. My message today is therefore simple. Be vigilant in observing the guidance and always report any symptoms immediately by ringing COVID 111. I'd now like to bring in our Director of Public Health, Dr. Henrietta Ewart, to provide an update on the Oxford vaccine. Henrietta.
Thank you, Chief Minister. Yes, I'm sure you'll be aware that the UK government announced this morning that the Medicines and Healthcare Regulatory Agency confirmed authorisation for the AstraZeneca or Oxford vaccine early this morning, and that will now go ahead with its rollout both across and here. The Oxford vaccine is, like the Pfizer vaccine, based on messenger RNA technology. So it works in a broadly similar way, but the way the vaccine has been designed and the way the messenger RNA gets into cells in the humans in whom it's been injected is slightly different. And the advantage that comes from that is that it does not have to be stored at the very low temperatures that are necessary for the Pfizer vaccine. They can just be stored at normal fridge temperature in the way that GP surgeries, pharmacies, etc., are very well used to storing vaccines. The other advantage is that manufacture is in the UK, whereas the Pfizer vaccine is manufactured in Belgium, so the supply lines are likely to be better. The UK has ordered 100 million doses of the Oxford vaccine, and we on the island will get our population-based share of that. So that should be enough to complete the two-dose programme in our full population. Other news that's worth sharing on the vaccines is that the MHRA and the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation have now confirmed that for both vaccines, there is a window of up to 12 weeks from the date of receiving the first dose in which the second dose can be given. So that means that there can be a change of emphasis in rolling out the programme to get as many people vaccinated with their first dose as possible, and there won't need to be such a focus as there was in making sure that we've got the second dose sitting ready for people before they have the first dose. So we really are at a turning point for something that should be a game changer in this pandemic. But we have to remember that at the moment we are where we are, and as described just now by the Chief Minister, and we really have to continue to push to keep the island COVID-free, A, so that we can enjoy living with the considerable freedoms that we have, but also so that as we deliver the vaccination programme, we are doing that without any of the extra precautions that would have to be put in place in terms of PPE, social distancing, and all of that in terms of delivering the vaccine, which would make doing so a whole lot more complicated than if we can keep COVID-free. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Hewitt. I would now like to take questions from the media. And first we have today is Rob Pritchard from 3FM. Good afternoon, Rob. Fastamai.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. Hope you all had a very pleasant Christmas. First of all, I'd just like to ask, just with regards to the Oxford vaccine, when do you expect the first dose of that to arrive on Ireland? And when do you expect to start a potential rollout of that alongside the Pfizer?
As I understand it, we're still waiting confirmation of the arrivals, and we are also still awaiting all the material that needs to go around the delivery of that particular vaccine. So that includes the what are known as patient group directions, which is kind of the way of doing a mass prescription for a vaccination programme. We haven't got that yet, and we also haven't got the training materials to make sure that everybody who is going to be giving the vaccines is fully trained in how to do it. So as soon as we get that, then that side of things can roll out, getting the governance and the training right, and then as the vaccines actually arrive on Ireland, we'll be ready to go with the delivery. But we're still working to the date of starting delivery of the Pfizer vaccines on the 4th of January, so that won't stop, that will roll along in parallel.
Supplementary to that, just with what you were saying there, do you even have a rough estimate as to when you maybe hope to start getting the Oxford vaccine up and running?
I don't anticipate that it will be long, but I can't give you a date at the moment.
Okay, thank you. My second question, just with regards to the Brexit trade deal, you yourself, Chief Minister, you've talked about the benefits to the likes of the fishing industry and agri-foods. Could you give us any examples of any other particular sectors on Ireland that could really benefit from this deal?
Well, we've got a number of aeronautical manufacturing companies on the Isle of Man based in Onchan, in Douglas, in my own constituency, and at Ronaldsway. And they make parts for planes for maybe the cockpit or the fuselage in Frankfurt or Paris. And these parts go into the UK and then are made into a bigger part and then end up in Europe. So those businesses will not be affected by any tariffs, which could have made their product unaffordable or caused a considerable amount of extra work for those businesses. So that's yet another example on top of on top of all our agriculture and fishing, cheese, etc., goods, that freedoms that we've already had, we've managed to retain the movement.
Thank you very much,
Rob. Next, we have Simon Richardson from Business 365. Good afternoon, Simon. Fastamai.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. Mine's a Brexit-related question. Banking and accounting businesses will lose their automatic right of access to EU markets and face some restrictions. Is that a major concern for the financial services sector?
Well, obviously, our Department for Enterprise and Treasury are having discussions with the banks to ensure what will be happening going forward. Obviously, we never had financial services with the European Union anyway. We were never going to get that. I don't know, David, if you would like to come in and expand on that.
Yeah, as the Chief Minister's explained, Isle of Man banks and financial institutions would never have had the automatic right to market their services in the EU, as would the UK. So it's UK financial institutions that have lost that right, the passporting right, as it was known. So unless there are sort of indirect effects on Isle of Man institutions, it's not something that we would ever have had, so we won't have missed. UK financial institutions may benefit from equivalence, which is a system that the EU had in place before the Brexit process, which enables them to participate and market their services to EU customers. But that's a process that they have to go through, an application process that they have to go through with the EU.
Thank you very much, Simon.
My second question. Yeah, without access to the European Court of Justice as the final arbiter in legal issues, to whom can people in the Isle of Man turn in future?
Well, obviously, we have our own court system, and then the ultimate will be the Privy Council. Again, David, if you want to expand on that.
Sure. Of course, there are two European Courts of Justice, and they're sometimes conflated. The European Court of Human Rights still has the ultimate say in respect of human rights matters for people on the Isle of Man, because we've agreed to be part of that convention. The European Court of Justice is, of course, the EU's highest court, and we would have had recourse to that only for matters which would have related to Protocol 3. Now, of course, that protocol has fallen and our formal legal relationship with the EU is gone. So, yes, we won't have recourse to that. But, of course, the Court of Human Rights is still there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Simon. Now we move on to Sam Turton from Jeff the Mongoose. Sam, good afternoon. Fast am I?
Fast am I, Chief Minister. Sorry about that. In terms of this deal with the EU, will the island benefit from other trade deals such as the one that was agreed with Japan, for instance, and future ones that come with that, or will we be excluded from them?
No, we're working behind the scenes to be included. Obviously, the Japan one does include the Isle of Man, but only for goods, and we are looking to, in the future, negotiate services with Japan, and I know other jurisdictions are being worked on, Canada, obviously America, Australia, New Zealand, and the Isle of Man is looking to be involved and play a part in these free trade agreements. I don't know, anything further, David, you would like to add?
Sure. As you may be aware, there were some 60 trade agreements which the EU had concluded with other countries, and they've been rolled forward by the UK under what's known as continuity agreements. And the Isle of Man was only ever covered by those agreements to the extent of trading goods, and we've retained that involvement, so we're still covered, say, as the Chief Minister's mentioned, in relation to the Canada agreement. With Japan, things were slightly different. They reopened that agreement and renegotiated it. So as a baseline, that covers us for goods. But there is also a permissive extent clause within the agreement itself, which we asked for, which means that we could have other chapters extended to us at a later date. So as the Chief Minister says, that could include services or intellectual property or other areas where we're interested in.
Thank you. Secondly, could I ask Dr. Yu a question, please? Okay. Hello. In terms of this, the vaccine changes that have been made up to the 12 weeks, how will that impact on the proposals for the rollout on the island? And will this move away from the airport as a centralised location to open up other areas, perhaps?
Yes, I mean, that's the question that DHSC will have to work through as the department that's responsible for the delivery. But yes, the new vaccine is much easier to administer because it doesn't have to be maintained at the cold temperatures and there doesn't have to be quite such careful management of it when you get it out of the fridge, when you mix it, etc. So it is a much easier vaccine to give in primary care, in GP surgeries and or in community pharmacies. So the authorisation of this vaccine really opens up a lot of new possibilities for rolling out a much smoother vaccination programme.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sam. Now we move to Ewan Gorn from Manx Radio. Good afternoon, Ewan.
Fastamai, Chief Minister. I was just wondering, firstly, can you give us an indication of how many EU vessels, you said they're a small number, how many you expect to want to continue to fish in our waters? And then could you expand by saying how you intend on policing those vessels and ensuring they have a licence to do so?
Well, first and foremost, they will have to apply for a licence and prove also that they have been fishing in our territorial waters for the 10-day period in the last 3 years. So we are expecting around the 2030 tops sort of number. So it's not a big number at all. And that's, but we won't be able to have the exact number. That's just a very rough estimate until they have applied, because they may not feel it's worth their while going forward. I would have to say that these will be the same vessels. They won't be allowed to be replaced by other bigger vessels, and they will only be allowed to catch the same quota that they've already been catching in our waters. So the answer is we don't know the exact number at this moment in time, but they will have to apply through DEFA and our fishing team for a licence.
And is the Barule, the patrol vessel, is that adequate to ensure if there are rule breakers, you can catch them and penalise them?
Well, it's not. I mean, I know our little vessel gets a little bit of stick sometimes about not being the fastest of boats, but all these boats fishing in our waters, it's a bit like a plane flying in our skies. They're all monitored. They have to give off a beacon, electronic signalling device to let us know where they are, and they're monitored. So, yes, checks can be done. Even if the boat isn't out at sea, checks can be done to make sure that they're complying with the rules and regulations and not going into areas where historically they've never been before. Mm. Thanks very much indeed, Ewan.
Sorry, my second question is also in relation to fishing, if that's all right. Are you concerned that if a situation develops, say, in the Channel Islands, where fishing rights are hotly contested with the EU, that if there are punitive tariffs introduced, the Isle of Man will be facing them as well?
That could happen. You hope it's not going to happen, but theoretically, yes, if punitive tariffs were implemented on the UK as a result of that, then yes, the Isle of Man is automatically caught up in that, and any of our goods would have the same. As I say, we've negotiated that all Isle of Man goods going into the European Union are treated as if they were as if they'd come from the United Kingdom, and therefore it stands to reason that if a tariff is brought on, say, on sheep meat or beef or a certain type of manufactured good, then that would impact on a product coming from the Isle of Man. But let's hope we don't get there. Thanks very much indeed, Ewan. And last but not least, we have Adrian Derbyshire from the Isle of Man newspapers. Good afternoon, Adrian. Fastamai.
Good afternoon. In terms of the Brexit trade deal, what opportunities do you think it might provide in our securing new markets for Manx produce? And on the flip side of that, could it actually make the island in some ways less attractive for foreign investment for countries such as, say, China, who would have seen the Isle of Man as a route into the European customs union?
Right. Well, I'll bring David in on an element shortly on that, but we still have our VAT and relationship with the United Kingdom. So if China wanted to come into the UK, there would be nothing to bring a product, say, into Southampton. There's still nothing to stop it from doing all its VAT negotiations through the Isle of Man, all that paperwork, and that's where we've been building up various businesses supporting that sort of relationship. That still carries on. I don't know, David, if there's any further. I mean, from an opportunity point of view, the free trade agreements being negotiated with other jurisdictions, we may be able to get a wider scope than we previously had, and I'm sure it's something Dave can expand on.
Yeah, I think the point you mentioned there about the free trade agreements is a good one, because when the EU negotiated free trade agreements with third countries, it could only ever do so on behalf of the Isle of Man to the extent that Protocol 3 applied. So it could only ever include us to the extent of trading goods. Now the UK is doing it, they don't have those constraints, and we can be included more broadly. So it means, obviously, our economy is largely services-based. We do a lot of financial services, so those are interesting areas we can explore. Another opportunity, potentially, is that now the UK has left the EU, or shortly to leave the EU, there is an opportunity for it to behave slightly differently. The UK itself is not constrained by its EU membership, and therefore it can deal with us differently if it chooses to do so. So I think those are two clear and immediate advantages.
Your next question, Adrian.
Yeah, our good friend Richard Murphy and Tax Research UK, well known to the Isle of Man, he has suggested in a blog that because Britain will no longer be bound by the EU code of conduct on tax, that there will be an impetus from the ground dependencies to retain full tax haven status, as you put it. It seems unlikely because the trade deal itself talks about compliance with global tax transparency and tax cooperation. But I wonder whether you could put that idea to bed.
Yeah, the Isle of Man is committed to playing its part in international tax transparency regulations and our reputation as such that we are one of only a handful of jurisdictions to be fully compliant with both rounds of the OECD's investigations into tax transparency. So where we remain committed to that, the Isle of Man is always wanted to go down and is going down the well-regulated part of that side of business. And nothing will change on that. Obviously, the UK will be looking at doing different things that they were maybe shackled by the EU, and we will, of course, closely monitor what they come up with. But I don't know, David, do you want to add anything on that?
Not really, Chief Minister. I mean, we already comply with the code group rules, and we already cooperate with the EU, in terms of its listing process. So we already do those things, and we're not obliged to do so under Protocol 3. We also adhere to OECD standards on tax transparency as well. So it's not like we're going to change that.
Thank you. Okay. Well, thank you all very much for those questions. Now, on Friday, a new year dawns. After all that 2020 has thrown at us, I am sure, like me, you will welcome the opportunity the new year brings for a fresh start and renewal. The issue concerning the future trade relationship with the UK and the EU and what this means for the Isle of Man is resolved. Next week, we will commence the COVID vaccination programme. Although our island has in many ways been fortunate during this pandemic, I know there has been sorrow and hardship. With 2021 on the horizon, I feel certain that we can look to brighter days ahead. Please enjoy the remainder of the festive season as we bid farewell to 2020 and welcome in 2021. And I will speak to you in the new year. Thank you all very much.